Hi, my name is Nicholas Beard, and you are listening to the Jazz Spotlight with Jan Ilunga.
Episode 40.
Welcome to the Jazz Spotlight, the podcast that gives you the insight and tools you need to be in the music industry today. Artists, authors, and top music industry experts give you actionable tips that will help you promote yourself the smart way. Here's your host, Jan Ilunga.
Well, hello there. How's it going? Jan Ilunga here from the Jazz Spotlight Podcast. Thank you for being with me. I hope you're having a great day. My day is going very well, despite it's a very windy day. The wind is blowing like crazy. But, you know, that doesn't stop me for being here with you and bringing you another great episode of the podcast. And by now, you probably know that when the title of the episode is A Jazz Talk With, the guest is a great artist, an internationally acclaimed musician or performer, singer. In the past, A Jazz Talk With has featured legendary jazz artists like Didi Bridgewater and Dave Holland, Michael Leake of Snarky Puppy, Kevin Eubanks, Jose James, Jamie Cullum, and many others. And today, I have another great guest here who's gonna share his career, his tips, and you know, it's gonna tell us more about performing, because in addition of being a vocalist, a singer, he's also an educator and is also a stage actor and TV actor. So in addition to performing at some of the world's most important festivals and venues, he has also appeared on big screen movies along Hollywood stars like Clint Eastwood and Michael Keaton, or also on popular TV shows. So we're gonna hear more about him in just a second. But before that, I want to give a shout out to a couple of people that have taken the time to leave reviews on iTunes and Stitcher. So I'd like to thank you, Ty_Lynn, I hope it's pronounced correctly, and Mac McWilliams. Guys, thank you so much for the support and for giving some great reviews to the podcast. I really appreciate it. Guys, you rock. Thank you so much. You really made my day when I read your reviews. Okay, guys, I don't want to keep this intro too long. I want to bring you this great guest, but just a quick note, like always, remember that you can find all the things we talk about and links and show notes at thejazzspotlight.com/episode40. Here is A Jazz Talk with Nicholas Beard. Enjoy. Hey, everyone. I'm here with another great guest for the podcast, and today we're going to talk about performance. And I'm not sure if there could have been any better guest than the one I have here today. Maybe you remember from episode 21 with Jamie Cullum, or episode 25 with Didi Bridgewater, where we talked about performance, what it means to be a good performer, and the importance of, you know, the performance when you are playing live. And today's guest is Nicholas Beard. He's an amazing singer who has been performing all over the world and at some of the most important events, such as the Monterey Jazz Festival and jazz venues, like recently at Yoshi's Jazz Club. And, you know, he has been playing with some great artists like Bobby McFerrin. And among other things, he has even appeared on big screen movies alongside the stars like Clint Eastwood and Michael Keaton, and also on TV shows like Nash Bridges and Monk. So who's better than him to tell us more about his career and about performing? It's with great pleasure that I welcome him on the show. Hey, Mr. Beard, how's it going?
It's going very well. Thank you, Yannick.
All right. Thank you for being here on the podcast. I really appreciate it, and I'm ready to tap into your brain and have a good time with you. So
let's go.
the first thing I always ask my guests, so that the listeners can get the web feed and get to know the guest a bit better, and in case they don't know about the guest, to get to know you. So tell us a little bit more about yourself and your career. How did your career get started?
Well, I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, and I was
always kind of singing as a young kid. But as I got into high school and actually in junior high school, I started working with other singers and doing what we now call doo-wop style singing, you know, small group singing. So I did that. And also I had a cousin who enticed me to come into the what was known as the glee club or the chorus at that time. So I started singing some of the choral music, which sort of a little more classically oriented. And I sang choral music. I sang doo-wop. I did all that all the way through high school. And in my last year of high school, I got offered a recording contract. It was kind of the first time I realized that this might be something more than just a hobby, you know, just something fun to do. And it didn't work out, unfortunately, but, you know, it gave me some inspiration to think about other things, other possibilities. And shortly, within a year or two after getting out of high school, college wasn't working out for me. So I went to the military. And it was in the military that I got into my first real professional band, which was a band formed by military players, the big 10-piece band. And we were doing all kinds of Motown and, you know, really exciting funky soul music, James Brown covers and all that kind of stuff. So we performed in Japan for about 2 years, touring all over Japan, hitting all sorts of big stages, small stages, concert, nightclub venues and all that. And it was a really great time. Made a lot of money doing that. And at the end of the military career, moved to California. I'd never been to California before, but I came out here in search of following the woman who is now my wife, and came out here and started to do just sort of nightclubs and that sort of thing, some top 40 bands and things like that. And from that, sort of got an idea, a sense of the sort of jazz direction I wanted to go. And I pretty much stopped doing the R&B music, but moved into the jazz world, and that's where things are now. So it's a, sort of a mini history of my musical progress here.
It's incredible. You have had an incredible career, and to think how you have progressed during the years. In the 80s, for example, you kind of had your breakthrough in the San Francisco music scene as a member of the Bobby McFerrin a cappella ensemble Voicestra. You were part of the radio play Jukebox along with Danny Glover.
Yes.
And then you went on to build your career as a solo performer, and now you are one of the most in-demand singers around in the world. And it's incredible to think about all the great places you have performed at. And if you were to look back at your career, if you were to talk to a younger Nicholas Beard, what advice would you have for him? Is there something you would have done differently?
That's always a hard thing to really determine, because, you know, the things you do lead to the direction that you wind up, you know, to the place that you wind up in. And I don't know if I had changed some things early on, if I might have been here or somewhere better or somewhere not as good. Mm-hmm. But I encourage all young people to, one of the things, if I had to say anything I would change is I would learn sort of the technical side of music earlier. I've always been a by ear player. I learned to sing by ear. I did all of these complicated choral charts all by ear, that sort of thing. And which is, you know, it's a blessing to have that sort of ear where you can pick up things quickly, harmonize with people and all of that, and you don't have pitch issues and things like that. So I've been fortunate in that way. Mm-hmm. But the music field now demands that you be even quicker in terms of the kind of work you can do. If you want to be a viable artist, you really need to get your technical skills down as much as you can. That would be playing the instrument, learning how to read correctly and quickly, and being willing to try all different kinds of musics, no matter what you think. If you think you're a soul singer, still, you know, look at the classics, see where some of these more complex musical passages, see how that's all developed, and so you can understand what you do from a broader perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And from the approach with fans point of view, how has it evolved? You have been performing really all over the world, and you have an international fan base. And obviously nowadays, with websites and social media and all these great tools, it's easier to reach out to fans, to connect with fans. And how do you utilize social media, you and your promotion team? And what advice would you have for musicians who are listening to us, who would like to build an international fan base?
Yeah, it's really amazing. I think the fan support I've had over the years, and especially recently, Facebook has been a big tool for us to reach out to fans worldwide. And people like to stay in touch. They want to know what you're up to and what your next program, where you're going to be, the way you think about and feel about things. Coming from an old school perspective, I was a little bit sensitive to Facebook and not sure that it was the thing for me when I first started using it, but it has been a very big help to my career, and certainly on a worldwide perspective. It's been a big help to get people to know me. I've met so many people who are on Facebook who have been, have been my friends on Facebook and who have come to my concerts whenever I get to their area and that sort of thing. And so it's a very valuable tool. We use that a lot, especially when we're going to specific areas. Facebook has some tools that allow you to sort of hone in on a particular area and generate information blast to people when you're going to be in that part of town. So those kinds of tools a lot.
Yeah, definitely. I like that you mentioned this last part. Thank you for doing that, because it's something, probably one of the most powerful features of Facebook, the ability to target specific people in specific region or in specific age range. I think it's great. And you have leveraged social media and your online presence in a great way when you had a crowdfunding campaign, a very successful crowdfunding campaign on Kickstarter. So I would like to talk about that for a moment, because I think you and your team did a great job. It was a couple of years ago when you were about to release your record, Your Sensational, A Jazz for the Soul, and you turned to Kickstarter, and you had a goal that you achieved and overachieved, because you pledged more than the actual goal is, and you have a great video. I would like everyone who is listening to Mr. Beard and I to just Google Nicholas Beard and Kickstarter and take a look at his campaign, because I think you can learn a lot from it, especially from the video. And can you share a bit of your experience with Kickstarter, and what are your thoughts about using Kickstarter to pledge something like you did, like a record?
Well, Kickstarter, I mean, is a great tool to use. It's really interesting the way it's set up. It's really set up to not only inspire your fans to help you reach your financial goal, but also as an artist, you have to really motivate yourself and your team to get the job done, because you have a certain time limit. And if you don't make it, you lose everything. You don't lose everything, but you don't get anything. So there's a real incentive to really market yourself, to use every aspect of your fan base to try to get them motivated to help you out, and also to bring in other people to help you reach your goal. Yeah, we had a very successful campaign, but I really attribute all of that, the majority of that, to my staff, my team, my back office staff. Mm-hmm. Because as an artist, you can imagine this, I was in the studio at the time, and it's a little difficult to be in the studio trying to create new music and being on the phone and constantly emailing back and forth to encourage support to do all those things at one time. But we were kind of in that process all at the same time. But it's you really need a team, like a street team, a back office team, to help you generate as much activity as possible. And you have to stay engaged with it. You can't just put it up online and sort of expect it to do its own thing without your help and constant promotion.
Yeah, definitely. And for you guys that are listening to Mr. Beard and I mentioned the video of his Kickstarter campaign, and I think that he and his team, they did a great job in really explaining what the project is about, where the money that backers would pull out of their pockets, where that money would go to, where what happened if the goal wouldn't have been reached, thing that likely didn't happen. So again, go to Kickstarter and look for Nicholas Beard campaign about your sensational. Now I want to switch the focus of our conversation on performing, because you have been performing for most of your life as a musician, as a Hollywood actor. You have appeared in TV shows or in the radio. So you are really a 360 degrees performer. And in addition to all this, you also have workshops. And one of these focuses or talks about performing. So it talks about how to go from a voice student, from being a voice student, to actually performing. So, Mr. Beard, what kind of performing tips you have to the listeners of the podcast who are, you know, maybe want to follow your footsteps, who are about to finish music school, who are thinking about having their first gigs?
Right. Yeah. Well, it's always an interesting transition to go from being a student to an actual performer. And that, what I encourage is that, you know, you sort of have to try every avenue that's available to you. And that includes jam sessions. If you have friends who are performing in their bands and all of that, encourage them to include you in a session or in a performance. You know, for a young person, just the opportunity to get on stage and perform. And, you know, sometimes you fall down, sometimes you really succeed very well, you know, but it's every shade of that. You know, when you get out as a young performer, you're going to have successes and you're going to have failures. It's just part of the path. So I encourage any young person who wants to be a performer, the key to it all is performing. So you have to take every aspect of every opportunity and perform. And you perform for your friends, for your family, perhaps, in your church group, if you come from a religious background. Any way you can. Some, you know, in the past, you know, you had a lot. People are really good, get snuck into nightclubs and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen as much anymore, but it's, you know, there are possibilities that you just have to make yourself available for. And as I said before, regarding the training, learn every aspect you can. Oftentimes, the people that you study with are the ones who will guide you into career opportunities. You know, if you're studying guitar or bass or piano, your teacher is probably a gigging or working musician. And when they see your competence or you know, you get to a certain level, they will often encourage you to say, oh, you know, there's a jam session at such and such, you know, you should come down and sit in and things like that, you know. So there are opportunities all around you once you make yourself available to them.
Mm-hmm. To take advantage of opportunities and get to know people.
Get to know people, yes. This business we're in is a very social business. It's about entertaining crowds. It's not about keeping it to yourself. It's a wonderful thing to revel and enjoy the music that you create, that you learn and that you create. But it's really about sharing with other people. You know, as good as you are in private, you know, it's so much better when you share that with an audience, with, you know, be it a small audience or a large audience. That's really when the circle is complete.
Yeah, and I have to ask you this because you sound like a very cool person. You have this smooth voice, both when you're talking and when you're singing. And your charisma on the stage is really impressive. And I have to ask you, how does it change performing to big events such as the Monterey Jazz Festivals that I mentioned earlier, or at popular music venues like the Yoshi's Jazz Club I mentioned earlier, versus smaller, more intimate gigs, more intimate venues? How does that change the way you perform? Does that affect you at all?
Well, it's an interesting question because it is different. It is different. You would think sometimes with the bigger venues that you'd be more it would be more, there'd be not more tension and more nerves. I actually pretty much the opposite. I get a little more, well, you know, if I have nerves at all, it usually happens more in a smaller setting. Nerves for me is just kind of excitement before I go on stage. And I find that once I get on the microphone and I start performing, that's when it just, you know, I kind of sink right into it and I'm at home and it's fine, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When you're performing in front of a large venue, I mean, I've performed for as many as 10,000 people, and it's really surprisingly comfortable to step out 10,000 people. It's a little more impersonal because usually they're farther back from you. I like to make a form of relationship with people in the audience and see their eyes and you know, interact with them from the stage. And it's a little more difficult when the venue is very large like that.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the focus has to be about my communication with the band first. So if I'm locking with the band, if I'm getting my, you know, in a groove with the band, the rest sort of takes care of itself. And that gives me some freedom to interact with the audience a little bit more, as long as the band is grooving. And, you know, I try to get up to the edge of the stage. If the audience is back a bit, I have to get up to the edge of the stage and, you know, and connect with the people out there.
Yeah. And earlier I mentioned that you have performed in many, many different venues, different festivals and different countries. And you talked about the interaction with the audience, first with the band and then with the audience.
Yes.
And how does it, obviously, when you perform around the world, you meet different people, different cultures, different ways of experiencing live music. So how do you cope with that? How do you approach audiences in different parts of the world who perhaps are experiencing your gig in a different way?
You have to be aware of cultural norms. I have not been to, say, like a Muslim country, mm-hmm. where there are restrictions on how you deal with a woman versus a man. So I have not had to deal with that sort of thing very much at all. But you have to be careful about that, I mean, because, you know, about cultural norms. And so I try to, whenever I get to a place that might have some different approaches of that sort, I try to become aware of what the culture is, and I don't want to offend anyone or, you know, step on any cultural taboos.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have to be aware that, you know, I mean, you're an artist, but you also have to be sensitive to culture.
Yeah. And I have to ask you for another tip for the listeners, a tip about singing and how to take care of your voice. Is there some Nicholas Beard trick that you can share with us about how to, you know, keep your voice at the best?
Well, you know, when you're on the road a lot, it's very difficult to get rest. One of the key elements of taking care of your voice, your instrument, which is a physical instrument, is not a piece of machinery. You can't just, you know, polish it up and tighten the screws on it and, you know, it works just like it did yesterday. Your voice is based on your physical health. So you have to keep yourself healthy as much as possible. And if you're going from venue to venue and you're hopping around doing a lot of one-nighters and you're on planes all the time, it's very difficult to keep yourself together because the planes are dry. The air in the planes are dry and they suck the moisture out of your voice. So the first advice I would say is, in whatever way you can, rest. Sleep as much as possible. To rest your instrument. It is very sensitive to being under strain and stress. And secondly, to hydrate. And I'm talking about water. I'm not talking about alcohol or coffee or that. But I'm talking about water and the purest, best water you have available. Hydrate yourself as much as possible. Coffee tends to actually dehydrate you, because it's a diuretic and it will force water out of your body. So if you drink a lot of coffee, you have to drink a lot of water to compensate for that. You know, so, you know, rest and hydration are the most important elements. Also, give yourself some sort of warm up before you go on stage, especially if you sing really hard. You have to give yourself some sort of vocal warm up preparation before you walk on stage and go into performance energy. It's a really basic thing, but they're, you know, it's really important.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the basic things are the most important things, or those that sometimes are overlooked. So I want to thank you for this advice about how to take care of the voice as a singer. And can you tell us about your music, your gigs, your upcoming projects? Do you have something coming up that you can share with us here on the podcast?
Well, sure. I'm going to be, this month, I'm going to be recording a bit in, mostly in New York with, and I'm working with Nat Adderley Jr., who was Luther Vandross's musical director and pianist for the bulk of Luther's career. But Nat and I have been working together on some new music, and I'm going to be recording with him later this month, and also with extraordinary saxophonist Vincent Herring, which I'm really looking forward to. So we'll be working together on some new music in New York. And then in November, I'm a panelist. Actually, I'm the panel chair for the Young Arts, for the Popular Voice Division of the Young Arts Organization, which is down in Miami, Florida. And so in November, I'll be down there selecting the coming year's vocal candidates. This organization awards scholarships to young arts and young artists in various fields, including theater, music, vocal music, instrumental music, dance, architecture, any number of arts. Really wonderful program for these young kids. And it will make the selection in November for the candidates. And then they'll all convene in Miami in January, and we'll award scholarships and do workshops for a week with them. So we're doing that in November to go down and select the candidates for the coming year, for 2015. Mm-hmm. And then on the old group Voicestra, the original group with Bobby McFerrin, we're going to be doing a concert as celebrating our 25th year anniversary. And we're going to be doing two concerts, November 18th and 19th. In Berkeley and Santa Cruz, California, just celebrate our 25th anniversary. And that's going to be Voicestra at Coamua, which is a famous club in Santa Cruz, California, and a Freight and Salvage here in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then December 13th, I'll be doing my annual, and this will be the eighth year that I've done this concert, Holiday Blues Concert. At a place, a local venue here called the Piedmont Piano in Oakland, California.
All right. You're a very busy man, and you have quite many exciting things coming up. And for those who are listening to us, head over to nicholasbeard.com to keep yourself updated with the great things Nicholas Beard is doing, and to check out the upcoming dates of his gigs, festivals, and the things he mentioned. And Mr. Beard, I have to ask you this. I know that you are supposed to take care of your voice and rest, but could you sing us something for 10, 15 seconds?
Love me, say you do. Let me fly away with you. For my love is like the wind, and wild as the wind.
Thank you very much.
Peace.
Ladies and gentlemen, this was Nicholas Beard. Mr. Beard, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Yannick, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure.
And we are back. Mr. Beard, what can I say? Really, thank you so much for this very inspiring interview. Really, thank you very much. It was very nice talking with you, and thank you for sharing your career and also for giving out some practical tips for those that would like to, you know, to be singers and performers. So thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking time for being with us on the podcast. So guys, to end this episode, I want to give you a sneak peek about the next episode, because that's an episode you don't want to miss out. If you're in the music industry, you got to listen to episode 41, because we're going to talk about websites, and we're going to kind of draw an anatomy of a music website. And, you know, the guest is someone who's developing websites for musicians, performing artists, creative professionals, and people in the music industry more in general. And He's building websites all the time. He's been featured on a music industry podcast, music business podcast, and he has recently launched his own podcast or vodcast, how they call it. And I can't wait for you to get to that episode. And if you want to make sure that you don't miss a single episode of the podcast and you have it available on your device as soon as I hit the publish button, go to thejetspotlight.com/show, and that's the iTunes page of the podcast. So just go there, hit the subscribe button, and if you have a moment, leave a rating and review. I'm Yanni Lunga. This is the Jazz Spotlight Podcast. Thank you for listening and have a great day.